It's not a matter of fault.
Hello, everyone. Pamela Zero here. Welcome to Duck Duck Goose, a podcast about the Visitor series. This episode includes Chapter 1 of the book Duck, along with some original music. Thanks for coming along on Duck's journey. Duck, Chapter 1. Duck, now the temple. Duck entered the temple cafeteria again, determined that this time she'd eat. She hesitated at the sight of so many people, each of whom had the right to be there. Duck did not. She swallowed and steeled herself. She had tried to do this before. The room was large, walls stretched up with windows placed too high for a little girl like her to see through. Voices rose and fell, cutlery clattered. 100 or so mouths eating, talking, everyone enjoying or enduring their meals. Doors dotted each wall, leading to private quarters, public spaces, negotiation rooms, or out into any one of the myriad gardens adorning the temple complex. Duck did her best to not get lost. Getting lost might mean getting caught. She took a deep breath and moved towards the cafeteria's high counter, with its glass cases of food. She'd spent the last few weeks watching as people came in, grabbed a tray, and casually took food from the cases. She had always come in the door with the intention of doing the same. Instead, she kept winding up in the far corner, watching everyone else eat. She'd made do with what she could pilfer from odd places around the temple. Some people stashed food in their cubbies while they practiced, and Duck would pretend to clean the cubicles quietly while swiftly sneaking away any bits of food she found. She understood that as long as she wore the dull, gray robes of an Offord, she could move around openly and undisturbed. Offord were always working for someone specific, so she kept to a routine and moved purposefully towards one pretend task or another. Duck was small for an Offord, with her 5-year-old stature, and yet again she sent a prayer wish to all the gods that were, are, and will be that she grow faster. Duck's stomach growled and she started towards the counter. As she neared the far edge where the trays were kept, she realized that the pile was higher than she had thought. The closer she got, the higher the stack of trays stretched. There was no way she was tall enough to reach up and take one. She considered pulling one out from the middle of the stack, but an exploratory tug revealed they were nested inside each other. She'd have to pull down all the top trays to get one from the middle. As she stood there, lost in the puzzle, a hand reached over her head, took a tray, and offered it to her. The hand was attached to a green-robed arm, and she glanced up half in gratitude, half in fear, to see a bearded face, stern but tolerant. She took the tray with a stiff nod and moved quickly towards the first glass case. She knew that man, but from where? She searched her memory. Light brown hair, sharp features, thin. He was wearing robes, which meant he was one of the priests here at the temple. Duck reminded herself that in this time and place, they were called lasts. Duck focused on the job at hand with a firm shake of her mind. She heard her second mother's voice in her head admonishing, "This is no time for mental dishevelment." She had a tray, and while the counter in front of the food seemed high, she could tip the tray onto it with relative ease. Pretending nothing was out of the ordinary, she slid open the first case easily, grabbed the first plate she could reach, and closed the case with a bang. She refused to wince outwardly at the sound. She opened the next case, grabbed another plate of food, and closed it quickly. Duck was more concerned with getting distance between her and the green-robed last than what food she was taking. She had noticed from her corner surveillance that the Offord never seemed to pay for their food, but still steeled herself as she took her loaded tray to the woman seated at the end of the food counter. She was nodded through. It was a bit of an effort carrying the heavy tray, but Duck managed. She walked carefully to an empty back table, where she deposited the tray and sat gratefully in a chair, savoring the sheer joy of having food before her. And what food it was! She had taken a red root of some kind that smelled like old rubber, but tasted a lot like sweet potatoes used to back home on Earth. There was a big plate of mixed vegetable-like things covered in a yellow sauce that was hot and savory, and a smaller plate of something that smelled like plums mixed with beef. She ate until she was full, then piled the food that was left onto the largest plate. She would bring it to the gardens on the roof and leave it under the worcester bushes where ice formed each night. She let herself sit for a moment, just a moment. "Safe and warm," Duck silently chanted to herself. "Safe and warm." It was a chant they had said countless times when they were all together in the prison lab at Burston. It had been horrific there, but she had been with her second mother and aunties, and she'd been cared for. Now it was just her, and where her family was, she had no idea. She felt a tremor inside and pushed away the thought. It was better to pretend she knew they were alive. She had lost one family when she'd been brought forward. To lose the second one was unthinkable. The sounds of the cafeteria brought Duck back to the present. She slowly opened her eyes and then took her tray and dishes to the side bins. The tray went into a thankfully shorter stack. She carried the nearly full plate as she walked out of the cafeteria, doing her best not to grin with triumph. Now that she could eat regularly, she knew that her days would be easier. Living while weakened was never productive, her mommy used to say. Duck thought it was probably her second mother, Mama Two, who said that. Her first mom was back on Earth, and that family had not known hunger or weakness. Ose, now the temple. Last, Ose kept his eye on the offered as she teetered the full tray off the counter and walked to a distant table. She had no scent of any particular quarter, and he wondered who was stewarding her. He turned to his partner and raised an eyebrow. Lucent sighs said nothing, but Ose could see him filing away the child's look and smell in his endlessly intricate brain. Both the last and the Lucent were Poonj, born on Poonjar, and bred to retain every scrap of sensory data they experienced when around a person. Here at the temple, there was no real need to use their extensive skills except as a diversion. Ose felt the bit of tremble in his stomach that meant he was intrigued and smiled at his life mate. Duck, now the temple. Duck got off the lift at the last stop and stepped out into the night air. She had brought her plate of food up to the rooftop gardens of the temple where she could hide it and herself until morning. The gardens were full of sound at night as the nocturnal plants and small animals started their patterns. She vaguely remembered that the worcester bushes were over to the right. She had avoided them after discovering they were a poor hiding place with freezing ice endlessly forming on the underside of the leaves. She preferred the warmer spots in the garden, near the buildings in the middle. That was where she usually bunked down at night or hid when the temple was too busy, and she felt unseen eyes watching her. Warmth was key. She wondered yet again if there was a way to get up to the vents on the roofs near the garden. The vent seemed to be a spot out of the way that no one would disturb, and she could set up a cozy sleeping spot if she could find a way to reach them. For now, she needed to drop off her food and then get some sleep. Tomorrow would be a better day now that she could eat reliably. Duck moved quickly to the worcester bushes. There was a risk that her food would be eaten by whatever small creatures rustled their way through the garden at night, but she knew that it would be easy to get breakfast now that she had conquered the cafeteria process. She kept off the gravel pathways by habit, silent and invisible, as she wove her way through the taller plants. She had just tucked the plate of now congealed food under the icicles dripping from a bush when quiet voices alerted her that someone was coming. She crouched down under the bush, flinching away from the sharp ice daggers that loomed above her. It was a shock to see the last from the cafeteria and another man slowly walking down the pathway, talking softly and seeming for all the world to be taking a moonlight stroll. Duck had never seen them in the gardens before, and her Burston-honed survival sense told her that their presence might not be a coincidence. It was possible they had followed her up to the garden. Duck made a mental note to avoid them both for the next week or so until something else caught their attention. Avoiding the men would be easy. The temple itself was huge, with sections to the east, west, and north. It was situated on the southern edge of Hetlum, a bustling city on the planet Kesu. The bright robes of the lasts could be seen on every street and in every public building, and the ubiquitous offered were constantly running errands and delivering messages. Duck knew that as long as she wore the robes of an offered, she could blend in anywhere, in or out of the temple. She shifted her weight, then froze as she heard the two men move past. Duck held her breath as they went by. She wished she could phase, but she had promised her second mother that she wouldn't unless an adult visitor was with her to make sure she didn't get lost. For Duck, getting lost meant losing track of here and now. Still, phasing meant safety and concealment. Promises were difficult sometimes. She had promised to stay out of phase and to stay in the temple until her second mother returned. Duck pushed the endless worry out of her mind, the chewed over whether Mama Two was ever coming back. Second mother kept her promises. Duck slowly, quietly, shifted her weight until she was kneeling under the worst of bushes, rather than crouching. She was glad she was small, so she could fit in little places. Her skin was brown, and that was good, too, because she blended in better. Most of the people here had different colored skin, and some had patterns. Here and now, she was mostly tiny compared to others, but Duck had been a bit tall for her age when she had come forward. She remembered holding up four fingers when people back on Earth had asked her age. That seemed a long time ago, but Mama Two and the aunties all said they'd not been at Burston for more than a year. Once they'd gotten free, they had traveled a lot, learning standard and trying to figure out what had happened to them. The way Second Mother explained it, all of them had come forward from slightly different times, but all of them had come from Earth. They had found themselves in a prison lab at Burston. But there were other places in this galaxy where people had come forward as well. People called them visitors, and there were over 100 of them. Mama Two said they were a big family. There were only 3 bodies of men visitors, and the rest were bodies of women visitors. Everyone was looking for them, especially the service. Mama Two said the best place to hide something is in plain sight, so they stayed in the temple, right under the nose of the service. Remember, Duck, no phasing, no dancing, and keep your cloak on. Stay in the temple. Yes, Mama Two. Say it, honey. Say it back. No phasing, no dancing, keep the cloak on, stay in the temple. All right, then. I'm going to go into the town and find us a heater. I'll see you tonight. I can go with you, Mama Two. Not this time, sweetie. Next time. Next time. But Mama Two had not come back that night, or the next, or the next. She had left food for Duck, but only for 5 days. By Duck's admittedly erratic count, it had been 26 nights since Mama Two had left. Duck pushed back the fear that she would be on her own again, like when she had been at Burston, before Auntie Fran had found her. Burston was not something that Duck liked to remember. There were people there that were not people, but huge, fast-moving blurs of teeth and gray-green hide. They were like scientists, except the experiments were the people that had been pulled forward. There had been pain, and endless tunnels filled with mold and stale water. Auntie Fran had found her first, and then brought her to Second Mommy, and then everything got better. There was still pain sometimes, and the experiments, when they couldn't hide well enough, but she had someone to watch over her, and her aunties kept her and Mommy safe and warm as much as they could. There was Auntie Maggie and Uncle David and Uncle Paolo and Auntie Fran, and there was not a lot of light and never much food. There was music, though, from their phones, and Auntie Maggie found out how to charge everything up with wires from the walls. Uncle David said that the laws of time were screwed up, but the laws of physics seemed to be pretty solid, even in the here and now. Duck missed music, But Mama Two had the player with all the songs. Even if she had it, the music would probably give her away. Duck thought about all the food in the cafeteria as she waited for the crunching footsteps of the two men to fade in the distance. Even crouched under the Worcester tree, with ice water dripping on her head, things were better now, much better. She wished that her mommy was there with her. Mama Two would be so happy about the cafeteria trick. She counted to 100 after the footsteps faded, then scuttled out from under the bush and headed to the center of the gardens. With luck, the elephant plants would still be unfurled, and she could roll herself in one of their huge leaves and sleep, safe and warm. Ose, now the temple. Ose and Sai stood silently in the shadows, watching Duck move out from under the bush. "Something is amiss with that child," said Ose. "She's hiding from someone," said Sai. "Who is she?" "I have no idea, but she's on the move." The two men followed noiselessly as Duck half ran, half walked to a plant with huge leaves and rolled one around her like a vertical sleeping bag. The rest of the leaves on the plant suddenly furled themselves closed as well, and the duck-filled leaf sagged a bit. The two men made their quiet way back through the shadows to the elevator and took it down a few floors to the entrance to their quarters. Neither spoke as Ose made some tea, and they both sat in the main room, sipping slowly and organizing their thoughts. What had started out as an interesting diversion was becoming a bit more. Fran, then Burston. Fran squeezed her eyes shut as the world tilted and went black. She tipped forward and landed on her hands and knees. She opened her eyes and found herself inside a glowing cage of light. She was wearing the same jeans and t-shirt she had been wearing a moment before, but now they were covered with some sort of dust. The air was thick and reeked of mold, and there were banks of machinery crowded close around the cage. Fran blinked, then opened her mouth to scream. She stopped herself just in time. Looming next to one of the machines was a huge grayish lump with what seemed to be appendages prodding a panel on the equipment. It was making snarling sounds. Fran put her hand over her own mouth to stay silent and slowly crouched down into the bottom of the cage. The bars of light were hot, and she kept her distance. A moment ago, she had been walking up the stairs in her house with her son. She half stood and looked around frantically for the boy. She was alone in her cage. She remembered her son's puzzled face, his tilting head, the black swarming up and over her, but she couldn't remember if the black covered him, too. Fran's breath grew shallow. She stayed, half-crouching, frozen in place, staring at the blob just a few meters away from her. Her vision started to fade at the edges, and she fought to stay conscious. She needed to look for her son. She bit the inside of her cheek so the pain would bring her back. So far, the lump had not seemed to notice her, or if it did, she was too inconsequential to matter. It was making loud growling sounds, seeming to mutter to itself. She took a deep breath, gagging from the smell. The lumpy thing was 3 times her height and outmassed her considerably. It was covered in a thick, gray-green hide with some kind of thorns embedded in its flesh. There was a roughly head-like thing at the top, but it was hard to tell if it had a face. Sometimes it blurred a bit, as if it moved too fast for her eyes to register the movement. It moved with confidence, comfortable in this putrid air and dim light. Wherever she was, she needed to escape. Her son could be anywhere. Fran grimaced and forced herself to breathe slowly and deeply. Her mind teetered on some razor-thin edge as she relentlessly turned it away from panic about her son and towards surviving long enough to look for him. Her eyes were watering in the thick air, and she blinked away her tears. Focus. She was in a cage, and cages had doors and locks. Find the door, find the lock. Fran scanned the sides of the cage, then the top, but there was no door, just slowly pulsing bars of light. The floor of the cage looked like rock. She glanced outside the cage and saw a bump on the floor that could possibly be a button. Or maybe it was just a stone, but at this point anything that would keep her focused forward and not screaming was a good thing. Fran inched forward, her eyes on the massive, lumpy being as it continued poking at the machinery. She reached the bars near the strange floor bump and judged the size of her hand against the gaps in the bars. Too big. Her hand, even turned sideways, was too large to fit between the bars of light. She took a deep breath. She moved her hand closer to the bars and felt the heat soar. The tiny hairs on the back of her hand crisped. Fear rose in her again, and she knew that if she let herself go into panic, she might never come back out of it. She closed her eyes, stilled her body, stilled her mind. Find peace, she told herself. Find calm. Find a way out. Find a way home. She floated on her thoughts, stilling her mind and focusing on forward. She heard a clatter and a growl of a shout, and her eyes flew open. Racing towards her was the gray-green being, howling with what seemed to be excitement. She had been noticed. Fran squeezed her eyes shut, and something inside her stretched away, trying to desperately be anywhere but here. She was suddenly cold, and the howling cut off abruptly. She opened her eyes, and the growler was still there, but moving very slowly, and looking around as if bewildered. It got near the cage and stomped on the lump on the floor. The bars of light disappeared, and Fran dashed away, putting as much space between herself and the growler as she could. It was searching in slow motion, lurching around, patting the floor with what passed as a foot. It didn't seem to see her. She could no longer hear it. She heard a dull thumping and realized it was her heart. As the creature bumbled about, Fran backed away slowly, wondering if it could hear her. She narrowed her lips and whistled softly, shortly, and saw the growler whip around slowly to face where she was. To her, the whistle sounded enormous, like an echoing horn. The blob may not be able to see her, but it could hear her. She saw the monster's face now, a melted-looking blob with a bubble in the middle that expanded in and out. The bubble opened, and there were teeth. Fran searched for a way to get out of the room, finally spotting an open archway past the bank of machines. She ran quickly by the thing before it could box her into a corner and out through the archway into a hall. Fran had no idea why the thing couldn't see her, but she wasn't going to stick around to find out. End of chapter one.
It's not a matter of fault, but falls, the future right now and loud in my ears. I like seeing you from a distance, closer you're not, as clear a breath of clean air in the drowning, the trap spring shut, I cycle round, angels in the strangest of places, and you gods. I wait for proof of their aid to arrive. I track the pendulum swing, fulfilling my role as a Jack Delaf's scribe, a sound of horns. In the distance, Diana smiles, unleashes hounds, motion lost in moving questions. Storm flooded truth. Endless knowing, eras ending, fear winks, pale and uncouth within sight of the fire center. Trap spring shut, I hold my ground, keep my heart so still, fear of waking you, it's now.